Thank you all for coming, and again, I'm going to talk a little bit about the component that Ricky just talked about when we get into VADS. What is VADS, how to use it, and then there's some authoring opportunities for the community to use as well. So we're going to jump right in. This is just a representation of kind of where VADS sits in the whole process, and there, this is a series of tools and flows that can be used for case notification, just as an example, for transport. But it also talks about validation with an MQF tool and FinMS for transport, as you heard, you know, Ricky pointed out a few minutes ago. But if you start down at the bottom center, it all kind of starts with the common vocabulary, which is where VADS comes in. And the part that sits behind that is a tool that came out about a year or so ago, which is UAF. We're going to talk a little bit about both of those, but I just wanted to kind of set the stage for where VADS sits in this component. So when you're developing messaging, electronic messages, et cetera, where do you start with all that? This is the place that you would start. So what is VADS? I'm going to put all these up here. Basically, back in 2004, CDC developed this web application that basically is called the Public Health Information Network Vocabulary Access and Distribution Center, or FinVADS. And it's basically used to access, search, and distribute HL7 message value sets. So really, again, if you're looking for vocabulary, this is the best place to start. It provides all the vocabulary and metadata used for HL7 messaging, promotes the sharing and reuse of value sets. Obviously, if everyone's using the same common standard vocabulary, everyone can send and receive. And again, and just to point out also, this is targeted for public health use. Obviously, we go outside of that a little bit, but this is really targeted at public health. There are a number of vocabulary systems out there. If you're looking for one related to public health, VADS is where you're going to go. We host multiple versions of value sets, and that's important, especially if you're doing research and you want to look back, what was the value set 10 years ago, 6 years ago, et cetera, versus I want to implement a new message, what's the current set? So we do version control as well. We provide APIs that allow you to basically talk system to system, so you don't have to manually pull something out. You certainly can, and we're going to talk about that in a few minutes, but you can use APIs that can actually talk system to system to pull that vocabulary out and keep it updated. Basically just a series of we talked about the metadata and just all sorts of information around those vocabulary, the value sets, codes, et cetera. So, and then ultimately, where you can get to this, it's publicly facing. You don't need some secret squirrel code or something to get in. It's sitting on the CDC website, and it's finvads.cdc.gov. So if you have access to the internet, you can certainly get to it. And the part that people don't always recognize is there's a whole team that sits behind that system. The system is wonderful, but it's really the team that developed and implement and maintains that system. And they're known as the CDC Vocabulary and Messaging Team. We're going to talk about them at the very end. So what is the purpose and usage of VADS? Basically, again, we talked about the ability to distribute value sets to achieve public health HL7 messaging. It also basically works related to SDO, maintaining and distributing of code systems and various formats. So again, it's not just for one targeted audience. It goes across a broad scope related, again, to public health. Facilitates the routing and filtering of the HL7 messages. And again, we talked about those API capabilities. So you can certainly go system to system if you need to or would like to, which is a nice feature. What are some of the areas that we focus on within that? We talk about the broad scope of public health, but specifically we have items in there related to ELR, immunization, syndromic surveillance, and those primarily are targeted for, if anyone's familiar with meaningful use, stage one. That vocabulary is specifically in there for those three, and those are the three that are targeted for public health for stage one of meaningful use. But we also get into the public health case reporting, case notification for infectious and non-infectious disease, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not going to read through that whole list, but you can see it up there. But there's a lot of wide target audience that we go after. Even though it's within the scope of public health, there's a wide target within that public health arena. So who are some of the users? CDC programs obviously have a strong desire to use this. It again allows for how they would like to see, send and receive that information back and forth across jurisdictional lines, et cetera, and also obviously up to CDC. So it sets that national platform. State and local health departments, HL7 messaging guides, and implementers of those, epidemiologists, and again, there's a wide range here. I do want to also point out at the very bottom, the last one is the public health applications. Most of the applications that, well, I should say, I'll almost go on the edge and say all, but most of the public health applications that are developed within CDC are using this VADS tool, so that they're using that standardized language. So again, it's kind of that one-stop shop for it. So the MSS tool, which is a validation tool, as well as MQF, another validation tool, and there's a number of others out there. But the other thing is the EMR and public health application vendors. Again, when we start talking about meaningful use, you're starting to see them starting to adopt that because that's where it, the vocabulary is being housed. So we're starting to get a lot of more, a lot more inquiries and a lot more interfaces with them as well. So what is in VADS? As of, I believe this is relatively current, I think it's only about 2 or 3 weeks old, but we currently have over 1,000 value sets, which is quite significant. And we, because of meaningful use, we upped that number by, I think it was over almost 30% within the last 3 or 4 months because of some of the activities that went on, that we were in the 700-800 range. We're up over 1,000 now. They support 60 HL7 and CDA messaging implementation guides, and they're also, we host 172 SDO code systems that are used in across HL7 value sets, and also many of those code systems, and there's roughly 120 of them, actually belong to HL7, so we're quite invested in the broad scheme of things. The updates are, we have a whole team, again, that works behind the scenes, but they go through and try and maintain and update those value sets based upon SDO code system updates, so we try and keep in step. That can be a challenge, and we learn that challenge if anyone's familiar with the RCMT work that was done. Those code systems were not maintained, not by VADS or whatnot, but they just weren't maintained. So we went through and not only have uploaded them into VADS, but we have put forward an effort that says that we're going to do our best to keep them maintained on a regular basis and housed in VADS so they have a permanent home. And then again, I talked about the meaningful use links for stage one, and those are active links right there that talk about the areas if you're interested in the immunization, ELR, or syndromic surveillance. That's the vocabulary sets that you can use to meet those meaningful use stage one. How can you actually access VADS? And we touched upon a little bit of this earlier, but the first one is obviously going to the web browser, and that's that CDC, the finvads.cdc.gov available on the website. And you as an end user can go, and there's a front-end interface that allows you to look through information, pull down stuff, download, et cetera, but it's kind of a person-to-computer conversation. Sitting behind that is something called VADS Web Services. And that is used for not only that front-end interface, but sitting behind there, if you wanted to go system to system, you would access that web services component. So if you have a syndromic surveillance system or something like that that you said, I want to have electronically connected to your VADS, this would be a way that you can do that. We also have something that I don't like to tout, but we have it. It's called VADS Lite. And the reason I don't like to tout it is that it basically is a standalone version of the VADS database that you would drop into a system that you develop that is really not connected to any kind of internet or instant access. And it's really used for if you have a deployable system that you're going to put in the field that doesn't have connectivity, this would be a way of keeping that component. And the reason I don't like to tout it is while it's a great tool to have, we prefer to have you have the online version or system to system, not that one that is, you know, constantly kind of hanging out there on its own. But there is a need for it, and there was a business driver to develop it, so we certainly did that. The other thing I'll point out about that is there's really no front-end interface with that. So if you said I wanted to have the VADS Lite and walk around with it on my own, there's no, the nice front-end interface doesn't exist on that. It's really to plug into a system. So. And you'll see there's a slide coming up that talks a little bit about that. And then there's a custom downloader. And that, again, uses web services. If you have some one-off version or some way that you want, I want selected things pulled out in selective ways, this can be done through that custom downloader. And we have a team of folks that actually will help you walk through solving those issues and problems. So it's some really unique things. And this is the piece that kind of describes that. And if you kind of start over on the right-hand side, this kind of shows you where at the bottom part, the published database is and how you would access it through the web application or through third party or system to system. The box that surrounds where it says VADS Lite, that's what I was talking about, how it is a snapshot of the database, but it doesn't really include the nice web interface that you would have if you came in through the website. So I just kind of caution people about that. There's definitely a need for it, but again, I caution people what their expectations are of what that is. The other side, the left side, is what we're going to talk a little bit about, and Sundak's going to talk a lot about, is the UAF application. That's the Universal Authoring Framework. And this was developed within the last year and a half or so around a way of, as Ricky had said earlier, her way of doing business was she would come up with a vocabulary, come up with a spreadsheet, send it to us, and then we would have to manually load it into the system. And what we wanted to do was put some of that back in the hands of the people that are actually owning that vocabulary. So we came up with an authoring tool that allows folks like Ricky to go out and say, I want to go out and build my own vocabulary, but I want to do it in the system itself. So there's a front-end application that allows her to go in and others to go in and do that where it's not reliant on the vocabulary messaging team to go in and manually build everything for you. Now, we'll certainly consult with you, we'll work with you to make sure it's accurate and appropriate, but this gives you a tool that you can do on your own so you're not doing the work and then we have to do the work that mimics the work you just did. It does go down into this authoring database, and that's where it gets kind of previewed by the vocabulary team, so it's not like we give you the keys to the kingdom and say, put whatever you want in and it'll go right into the production world. So it does get reviewed and appropriately assessed and then finally moved into the production side of the world for access for everyone to see. So this just talks a little bit about that web browser. Again, how that web browser hits the web services piece, and then that kind of hits the system in the background. And we kind of talked a little bit about this, but the web services are built on open standards, so you should have no issue if you wanted to talk system to system. You shouldn't have a real issue with having the ability to do that. So. This again just kind of talks a little bit about that authoring path that we just discussed. It is a web-based front end so that folks can access it and go through and build their own vocabulary. It does provide for the versioning capability as well, so it's not just a matter of you're not sure what version you're working in, you can build new versions, etc. It does track historical and database updates, so we kind of know what version we're working in, but also we know if there were new versions updated and added, and it's an interesting thing you'll see coming up in a minute about that's important to point out. And then it also allows for multiple users to author data simultaneously, so that's kind of nice because in the past, again, you were kind of targeted down into one arena, which is the team here that said, I want to submit stuff. Well, if there were five people in front of you, you had to wait. Now you can kind of author your own stuff, and then it goes through much faster, much more efficiently. But as I said earlier, in the bottom portion of this really talks about how you would enter edits into the authoring database. It then goes through a review process in the database, and then ultimately gets moved into production. So there's not a one line where you put something in, it goes automatically to production. There are some safety features, we'll call them. So the UAF usage, it is currently available. It has been out there for about a year now?
Yes.
About almost a year. And it does follow, again, the various standards and formats, so we're not kind of using various things that are not out there. And again, Sundek's going to talk a lot more about this. I don't want to spend too much time on the usage of it, but the thing I do want to point out is it has been out there for a year, and if you haven't heard of it, there's a bit of a reason why. we were very focused on rolling this out and getting the usage out and doing much more outreach. And about 6 months or so ago, we were diverted to do RCMT project, which focused all the attention of the vocabulary messaging team on completing RCMT, which took us away from the outreach part. So we're hopefully going to be re-engaging you as a community to say, this tool's out there and we want to have you use it and get engaged in using it, as well as the VADs in general. But that's why you may not have heard it, even though it's been out for a year. A lot of our resources were redirected. This really just talks about the that versioning, and hopefully if you just look at the first one in July of, and this is just an example, but in July of 2009 there were two concepts out there, and then in January of 2010, which you go to the center section, a third concept was added. So now there's two versions out there. And then finally in July of 2010, one concept number one was retired. So again, depending on where you are in your work, if you're looking at doing the current version, you obviously want to be looking at version 3, where concept one doesn't exist anymore. But if you're doing research and you say, well, what was done in 2008, because I'm looking for the vocabulary from there, you're going to look at version 1. So that's the importance of that versioning control and the ability to get and access all of that in one place. So that vocabulary with different versions is maintained across the VAD system. So you don't have to go to other systems to look for historical information. This just talks a little bit about the UAF security and roles. It is roles-based, and again, I'm going to let Sundak talk a little bit more about it, but I did want to just let you know that there are various levels. And when you look down at the bottom, obviously each individual user is associated with one of these roles, and depending on what role you would get assigned and what your need is from a business perspective, you would have access to read and write versus just read-only, et cetera. So there are different levels from just the UAF perspective, from a security side. And this is just an example of what some of those different roles are and what their access to what modules there would be, et cetera. So I don't want to go too deep into this, but this just shows you kind of the background of what it is and why we're doing this. So if you wanted to use UAF, and hopefully there's another demo of the VAD system tomorrow down in the exhibit hall from 1 to 2. So if you want to see any more of this further in depth, you can certainly go down there and see, and obviously talk to either myself or Sundak, and Vanessa's here as well. We can talk to you more about it. But if you wanted to request access, how do you do that? So the first thing you do is send an email to it's finvs@cdc.gov. Send an email and request. You'd say, I'd like to access this UAF tool. You want to try and note what desired level you want to be using. Now, granted, you may not know what those levels are, which is fine, but you may want to say, I need to author versus I need to just view, et cetera. So we can talk more about that. And that goes through a governance process, and that governance process is going to determine what level you end up receiving. So you may think that you need global rights to do everything, and they may say, you should probably just be viewing things. So, but that goes through a process that, again, is kind of community-based. And then, is anyone familiar with the SDN digital certificates? Raising of hands? Yeah, I see a lot of heads shaking. So the bad news is, I should say the good news is you don't have to go through an SDN digital certificate to get here. The bad news is you have to go through something called SAMS now, which does include identity proofing. So I'll put that out there. But that is the new version of what SDN is becoming. So there is while it's not as painful as the SDN digital certificate, there is some pain involved with it, I will warn you now. But you would go through and create the SAMS account, and that would allow you access to use the UAF tool, because obviously this does sit behind a secure firewall, and there are some security needs that we have to meet to allow people to access this outside of CDC. So the other thing that we would ask of you is that there's some training and orientation, and here's some things that you would go through, which obviously we would walk you through, show you how to access these things and provide for you. But a lot of these are really things that you have to meet, but they're not as, although we'll call them requirements, they are required for you to do, but it's not as overbearing as it probably looks, especially if this is the industry that you're in. You should probably know a lot of these things already, but this will help walk you through how to do things. But also, again, remember, there's a team that sits behind this that will help you. It's not a get online, do all this other stuff, and we'll talk to you 6 months from now. It's, you know, they'll answer any questions you have. They'll work with you on meeting your needs and getting you on in a timely manner. Some updates in terms of how we as a VADS team, or I should say the messaging and vocabulary team, put information out. There is a listserv that we meet a number of different communities of practice and other organizations, so we send information out on a regular basis through those channels. There's a VADS online forum. There are monthly vocabulary messaging community of practice meetings, and if anyone doesn't know what that is, I'd be happy to talk to you afterwards about that, but that's a really important function of meeting the community goals. And then the RSS feeds, and that's what I was talking about, the ability to track those updates. If there's a specific targeted area that you want, you can actually set up an RSS feed so that when anytime anyone updates that specific area, you would get an RSS feed sent to you. So that's a nice feature that was recently added to the system that allows you to track areas of specific interest without constantly having to go back in there and look for things. And again, frequency, we do things regularly on a monthly basis, but obviously if there's a need to do it more frequently and on demand, we have that capability in the event of an outbreak or a natural disaster. I talked a lot about the community and community practice, et cetera. We do have a presence on the PH Connect website. If anyone's familiar with that collaborative forum, there is a strong presence there around vocabulary and messaging as well, specifically around VADS. And then I mentioned before, but if you have any questions, if you're looking for any specific help in anything or just general conversation, again, email to finvs@cdc.gov. And that will get you information directly and get you engaged with folks on the team and to the right person on the team. I talked about that already. And then again, just as a reminder, if you want to go out and see the VADS system itself, you can go to finvads.cdc.gov, and that gets you right to the system itself. And you can kind of play around in there and see what we have and what we offer. I just wanted to point out that I joined this team probably 9-10 months ago. And the folks that you see listed up here have been doing this for, in some cases, 7 or 8 years. So I'm kind of the new guy on the block, so I'm not going to take all the responsibility or credit for all the wonderful things that they've done, but these are the folks that really deserve that credit. They've done a ton of work that is highly impressive, at least in my eyes, and they've really delivered on things that especially in the last several months around RCMT, et cetera, they've delivered things that we didn't think were deliverable. So, and again, they do it all in conjunction with the community. The ELR National Standards Task Force and some other groups, they're heavily engaged in and heavily involved in, and I appreciate the work they do. Any questions for me before we jump in with Sundac?
Mark, there's just something I wanted to add. If you're asking for access to UAF, once you send the email to the finvs@cdc.gov mailbox, I will send you a user form for you to fill out and send back to that mailbox so we can keep track of who's asking for access. And we also go and periodically check to see if the people still need access or still in that particular division and if we should transfer it to someone else.
Good point. Thank you. Any questions online? Nope. Okay. Seeing none. Turn it over to Sundac.
So thanks very much, and I'm just going to go back to the one slide. So I'm not going to have any slides. I mean, at the end of the day, all has been busy from morning, actually. So I'm just going to keep it very brief. Rather, would have more interactive discussion because we want to get the feedback from you how we can all work together and help your needs. So one of the things I wanted to notice is, if you see the first one, we have only in CDC vocabulary team, only 1.5 employees actually working to dedicate to support all the CDC programs. And then the gracious effort from support from APHL, We have Ricky Merrick supporting all the laboratory efforts for FLIP, and then Jerry Sable is there. He's been helping with us for almost 6 months for the RCMT and still going on with all the development and implementation. So I think VADS is just one of the product. I think we do a lot more than that in the vocabulary team, working with the programs, asking them what their needs are, and then we're also trying to work with the actual public health department and other agencies too, and we also work with the standard development organization because standards are very difficult to adopt when you cannot just go and implement. So we do need to provide feedback to them, or I think these things doesn't work, or you need to help us with the training and those kind of things. And a lot of them are related to the content actually. So sometimes you cannot make decision about certain things just by application. So you have, if you're a laboratory expert, yes, you know about everything about lab. If you go to FinVADS, just go. If you're trying to search for a laboratory person searching for medication, it's going to be difficult. Otherwise, somebody else, program manager trying to find out something else, it's going to be difficult. So it's really, it's not about application, it's about the content too. And also in a bigger picture, I also wanted to tell you is, the VADS is also, we don't focus on trying to do what other agencies are doing. And just to give you an example, as National Library of Medicine is a bigger umbrella for all the federal agencies and for all the HHS-related efforts. They distribute all the standard coding systems or help and fund and do all of them. So one example is SNOMED. As you all know, we have paid the taxpayers' dollars to make it free for all of you, and they're providing a lot of support to add the content and provide the support what all we need. And the same thing vice versa, the NLM funds other organizations like Law Inc. for laboratory tests. So there's a lot of different things that's going on. VADS, we are not trying to redo the work what we are doing them. So just to give an example is SNOMED may have 300,000 concepts. All we are trying to do is a Salmonella program or a TB program. They wanted to know the lab test related to what the Salmonella or just for the lab results that they needed to do. Or it could be a simple question form. If you have in a case report form of a tuberculosis, you have 10 questions there. Some of them may be a simple free text. Some of them may have an answer list. For those answer lists, we try to provide them what's the right thing to do, and then we'll try to give them those answers. It'll help the CDC program or public health program try to give them those things. So I'll use a couple of slides, but the main thing is really VADS is really... So VADS is mainly what we are trying to do was to facilitate the subset of whatever the programs need or whatever the community needs. We work with them in trying to create the subset. This is an example of how complicated it can be. I just entered an anthrax term. I mean, just you get a results actually from all over the place. Am I searching on an anthrax vaccine or anthrax disease or anthrax signs and symptoms? You have so many subsets you can do. Depending upon your form, what questions you have, your answer list changes. So those are the issues there. And it's really, and again, it's very unrealistic expectation to have every public health department to have a vocabulary there. Most of the time, we practically see most of IT person who may know some of the database management. That's the very common situation. And again, things are changing with the APHL and FLIP they did. They engaged the laboratory experts, and they had a dedicated personnel like FLIP, what Ricky mentioned. So they took all the efforts, they used the laboratory and asked their what they're doing, and then they actually do the authoring and do the distribution. So the same thing with the vocabulary team with 1.5 resource. We really try to work with all the CDC programs, public health community. It's quite challenging. The way we are trying to do it is everything through collaborations, community of practice. We need information from epidemiologists. We need information from laboratorians. And we need information from the people who are actually going to use it at the states. It's not just one person's effort. So it's a multiple role. And again, from an authoring perspective, it's going to be challenging. And even if you take an example of a SNOMED, I mean, in this case, anthrax concept is found in four different answer lists, just depending upon the context, what you would use. So, and again, we use the same standards. I'm going to skip those things. This is the point I really wanted to stress is, really wanted to form some sort of a governance panel. So we don't want to simply change on our own and something, and we know people are all using it downside. We don't want to affect implementations. And it's a very few projects are very tightly controlled, like one of them is FLIP and National Healthcare Safety Network. They actually distribute their vocabulary in a very controlled way and do the versioning and all of those. But pretty much 90% of them, rest of them, just the states go there. They'll say, you implement the TB case notification guide. They just go and download it, and there's also high likelihood a vendor is involved in it. They download and do all of these things, and it's also involved with the messaging. It's not just the vocabulary stand on its own. It starts with the messaging and all of those things. So really, this is only one piece of the puzzle. So it's really vocabularies alone cannot solve this issue. Have to work with the program, epidemiologist, messaging, and vocabulary team. So one of the things we were trying to do it is want to form some sort of a governance issue. So once in 3 months or something else, get the guidance from SDOs, say on what our needs are, what things work. And then also people who are using it, ask them actually, is it really working? What the issues you have? And then we also wanted a representation from vendors group, because they are the people, in a way it's easier to implementation. If you take one vendor, if you work with them, explain to them, if you resolve those issues, this is how we make things work. And they may have implementations in 10 different states. It makes their life easier for the states. So we are trying to work with all of them. In public health, again, we are on the receiving end. So we also have to focus on, for example, ELR, meaningful use, which Mark mentioned. So we have to work with the hospitals. I mean, that's a totally different game. We have to work with the EHR vendors and EHR. There are some consulting agencies have been given funding to go to the hospitals and help them to do those things. So we have to work with them and make sure when they're sending the results, they send their Kirk Loring code or Kirk SNOMED code. So we do provide consultation for those bigger agencies who are doing the mapping. And then we try to give them feedback in that way so we can refine the content and provide more guidance. So that's kind of a... And the other thing is also, you probably must have heard, and it, depending upon how technical you are, so for every concept, and if you're sending in a message, you have to have an identifier. So what code system? If I'm sending in anthrax, is it really ICD-9, or is it a SNOMED, or is it something else? So those kind of things, OID management itself is a lot of issues out there. You must have heard about it. That's one of the challenges we have. If it's related to vocabulary, okay, we'll take care of it. If it's related to an organization or application, that's a little bit different. You have to go through a different teams. And if it's beyond that, HL7 also has an OID registry. It's really complicated for end users, so many pieces in it, to manage this. And then most of the implementation guides, you have about at least 30 value sets would have 30 answer lists there. So managing them in different SDOs have a different timelines. SNOMED updates twice a year in January and in July. And then and if you take Loic, they anywhere from 3 to 4 times a year they do. So in the other most common things we get actually is they find a microorganism and they cannot get those, find it in SNOMED. And if they submit the request, now there are mechanisms to get these SNOMED codes quicker, or there's at least an alternate way, and we heard from yesterday Jim Case and others. But that's a common example. Oh, the lab is sending this code, or they're sending their local codes, we need this codes. But there's also a lot of issues. The SDOs, they're not going to give the codes right away. Okay, just take this code and do it. But they have their principles, they have the model, and what needs to be there, and what needs to stay at the local level. So there's a lot of issues. It's really not the vocabulary team we can do. We kind of sandwich between the implementers and the SDOs, try to help you all what you need. So, and the other thing is the tool that UAF is a tool that's mainly for authoring. Is it really useful for all the state public health department to use it? Again, depending upon the use case, if I'm in a state of Washington State, I may not be in need to download all of them. They don't need to go through the pain of actually authoring and doing all of them. Let them take maybe if tuberculosis, 15 concepts are there. So the issues maybe they may not in their state, they don't want all the 15, they wanted only 4 or 5 of them. So they can constrain it. We try to keep it at a national level, more generic level. It's a little bit broader too. We don't constrain too much unless the program specific implementations like FLIP and NHSN, they say this is what we want. This is a period, we want to do this one. And I think there are certain mandates out there too, like for case notification, you're supposed to use the NND cards to report those cases. Those are the things we don't have options, we just work with them. And then there's a lot of vocabulary in public health concepts that you cannot translate the concepts, what you have in the paper form, and try to get a code. Some of them are very long, and I can show you some examples later on, time permits. You cannot try to put everything as one code. You may have to break them into multiple pieces. And then we don't want to make that complicated to the end user. I think the informaticists can work on the back end and try to make it appear, oh, this is the how you do, actually. And good example, Ricky mentioned about the specimen. I mean, you have to have used the HL7 message, you have to use a link, and all of these things to manage the whole specimen things. It's not just a code, really the whole management of how you distribute the specimen and various information. And the UAF would be useful if you're planning to manage your things. Then it's useful if you don't find something in VADS, if you wanted to say, I don't find a value set for a particular disease. If you don't find it, or I have a use case, I don't find this answer list anywhere in your VADS, let us know. If you have a need, then definitely it would have been need for others to, rather than you all working, just give us the concepts what you have, or give us the case report form, or whatever things you're all working in. We'll be able to add it in quickly in an easier way. So with the UAF, we can actually, as fast as if you give us a request, something outbreak happens, want concepts quickly, overnight we can publish them. So that's what the UAF application has the capability. And we have rolled out this capability to only to almost like super users who are the vocabulary specialists. They can manage those. So we don't want it to give this access to everybody else, because basically they don't need to do it, and we will work with them. And we don't need to, and also we work with other organizations, not just only within public health, like U.S. Department of Agriculture and other federal agencies. We also work with them, and if they need something else, they don't need to actually redo the whole thing. So we just actually share the resources and reuse them. And one of the things is UAF is not meant for authoring the concepts. It's really for if you have an answer list, you want to distribute it. It's really a distribution tool, not necessarily. You can do minimal authoring, but it's cumbersome. Therefore, those things you have to do outside. If you want to author a concept for SNOMED, you have to go to the SNOMED browser, you have to go to the SNOMED tools. They have those things, and work with them and get those things there. And once you know what your answer lists are, you're trying to distribute them, you can use this to efficiently manage. And this is more, it does all the versioning, as Mark has mentioned. It does all of those things, but I think the key is we can give the access, but really it may make it more complicated than it's needed to be. And then what we are trying to do is, at some point in time, if you have a good vocabulary, in a few days they can use it, and they are publishing it, and they can see it in the review, and one of our team members will review and publish it. After we iron out all these issues, they can give the cable, once everything is working fine, then we can elevate their usage. They can publish it pretty much on the same day if they need it to be done. And then the other code systems too, every time when we update the code system, every state, they don't need to update them. We actually update the download SNOMED once in 6 months, update them in the UAF in the application. And then what it does is it tells you, oh, you updated the SNOMED, these are the values that are going to be affected by this update. It does give us indication. So we can actually go and back to the program. By the way, your answer list you had, that concept you used, it used to be active one, now it has been retired. Do you want to change it, or do you want it to actually keep it that way? And that's really, we don't have a hard, fast rules. Some program will say, always give us the updated one. We don't want to keep any deprecated ones or retired ones. And some program, no, people have been using this for a long time, and we need to know, people may be not be going to send an updated one. A lab may be using the code. The code may have been retired about 3 years ago. They may not have updated then. So we need to know when that code comes, what it is, how you can tie all these things together. So really, it's based upon your context and usage. We try to bend the rules, and then we work closely with the HL7 vocabulary committee for getting some guidance. So, but at bottom line, it really will try to work with you and then see what you need. But I'll stop here, actually, and then open up the floor for questions. Yes, Jim.
In that instance, we'll be able to provide concept identifiers within the U.S. extension to SNOMED, but we will not be able to provide alphanumeric codes. So how would you account for that within FinVADS?
So I think most of them actually, at least the messaging implementations, they're gradually moving over to the concept numeric IDs. If you see in FinVans, when they download a value set, they get the concept code as the numeric code. So we keep the alphanumeric as a metadata. We keep recommending them, use them, but we're also trying to provide a translation table on the back end to kind of help with the transition. And it's mostly the programs or the public health department, they're receiving these. They need to look up those things. So like state of New York, they've been actually mapping them. Actually, they had a resource, so they were able to map those things and then work with the LIS systems or the labs and then try to map those things. But so far, we were assuming for every single code, you would have a corresponding alphanumeric code. But I heard from you yesterday, too, that it may not be the case.
That's true for every extension. They're not authorized to assign
yes.
those because they don't. Those codes don't have a namespace associated with them, so there's no way to manage that. The other impact that is going to happen with SNOMED, and I'm not sure whether it's going to impact FinVADS or not, is the introduction of the redesign of the SNOMED hierarchy to include metadata concepts, in which a number of the newly assigned metadata concepts have IDs that are quite long, 17, 18 integers. Are 17, 18 digit long integers, and I don't know whether that's a problem in terms of the size of the fields that you're using within the database. Some databases can't handle integers quite that large. I'm not sure whether or not that's a problem that you have.
Yeah, I mean, I think the two challenges with the size is, one is obviously the HL7 messaging, it may not have been an issue, but a lot of vendors have their systems restricted to their specific fields, whatever it is. That's where we are going to have a lot of issues. All the surveillance systems in the states and everything else would be, and that's the challenge. That's the only way to know is work with them and help them see how we can rectify the situation. Most of them are open. They can move things around and then make those changes. And then with the microorganism, I mean, it's not a small thing. I mean, I think 2004 or 2005, we had a big in San Diego. I think you all had a group together and discussed about this SNOMED microorganism hierarchy. It takes a long time to see those changes happening into the code system. It's like 4 or 5 years have taken. And again, I'm not blaming it on SNOMED. It's really a lot of them on the content and refining these things, changing these things, moving things around. Has a lot of people with the decision support, they use SNOMED. That's one of the main things they do. They have to change their decision support rules. They have to change the how they actually receive the codes and manage those things. All of these things have to happen in a coordinated way, have so many players involved in it, CDC programs on the receiving end or public health programs on the receiving end, and the vendors need to update, and labs need to be updating. So it's really a resource-intensive things that it's very hard to kind of make any change. One of the things yesterday I mentioned is if SDOs could help us, okay, this is the way you could do. I mean, change the things rather than just providing these webinars and all of them, engaging all the people involved in it, bringing it to them, so it'll kind of help the implementers do all of those.